is something to cover some of the things. I don't know exactly what he's going to say about everything, but I do know it'll be a good one. I met Frank years ago. The last class I taught in school, your oldest son was in that class, sixth grade.
Yeah.
It was a hard time because it was one of my best classes I ever had. Not just saying that because he's here, but I also knew how many good athletes were in that class, and I thought, well, I should be still coaching. And later on, they really showed I should have stayed coaching. They had a great team, but now he's involved in the community. We appreciate all he does, so I'm going to turn it all over to him.
Got it. Good morning. Can everyone hear me okay? Perfect. How about seeing? Can you see okay? So, this is my first time being here, but so I'll be looking up at the screens, of course. I don't remember all of this by heart. I actually just did this PowerPoint for you guys. So, this was, I literally just whipped this up for you based on what the church wanted. Where'd Mark go? See? Oh, there he is. So just in talking with Mark via phone, we're working back together on what would be the best presentation to start with. So what we're going to do is a basic emergency response. And I'm going to keep it as quick as I can on the PowerPoint. So we have about an hour. So I want to keep it to that. I don't want to hold you any longer than an hour. But I just want to have time at the end if there's any questions. Okay, so I will say this. I really hope this presentation, I had to think about this for a little bit. I'm like, okay, I don't really know what anybody's skill set is in this room. So I had to kind of start my PowerPoint from that. This whole presentation, this whole training is based on that I don't know you that well. I don't know what your skill set is as far as emergency response goes. So I'm going to start very basic. Does that make sense? Okay, good. Because I'm gonna keep it simple. And what I like to do when I do presentations and trainings, and I've been doing it for a long, long time. I've been in law enforcement now for 29 years. So you're sheriff now. I'm in my eighth year, and it looks like I will be reelected for another four. So you're stuck with me. I don't know what to tell you. You did it. Right? So listen, we're going to get right after it. As I go, if you have questions, I'm okay if you raise your hand. If you want to wait to the end, you can wait to the end as well. Again, I will stress, though, I really hope this is not beneath you. I hope that you get something out of it. Or if nothing else, I hope it's at least a refresher. And then just so you know, I like to move around. I'm not a guy when I do presentations. I don't like to stand still. I've been told I have ants in my pants. So we'll go with that. You guys ready to get started?
Yep.
Okay, we're going to start with 10 jumping jacks and 20 push-ups. Just kidding. You should have seen some of the looks on your face. If I would have had a camera, I'd have taken some pictures. I bet you could do it. You could probably do more than me, right? All right, so let's get started. So just a quick introduction. Do you know the first aid? Do you know that first aid can empower you to act swiftly and effectively in times of crisis? And that's a yes or no? Yes. Okay. I told you it'd be simple, right? So that's the test question, and we're all done for the day. Nah, just kidding you. We got a ways to go. Accidents and medical emergencies can happen at unexpected times, often catching us off guard. True, right? Can that happen here? Has it happened here? There you go. So if it's predictable, it may not be necessarily preventable. However, we can avoid a further crisis by just being prepared and having some training. Just a little bit of knowledge goes a long way. And here's the neat thing about churches is that we all come together, right? And we come together, we pray to God, especially for beautiful days like this. Are we not blessed? So we come here, but guess what? We have so many people to pick from. Your knowledge set may be a little bit different, might be better than his or hers. It's just, we don't know. But if we all stick together and we all have a little piece of the pie, we all have a little bit of that knowledge, Can you imagine what we can do if we just stick together? We can avoid things getting much worse. We can't necessarily prevent someone from maybe having a heart attack here or slipping and falling. Things are going to happen. But if we stick together and we don't panic, I bet you we can save lives and furthermore make things so they don't get any worse. Okay, and that's what we're going to talk about. So here, in fact, more than 4.4 million individuals lost their lives to injuries and emergencies every year. That's a significant number, okay? So the better we're trained, the lower we can make these numbers. Whether at home or in public settings such as here, being aware of the three C's and three P's will help you take the required action immediately. And that's what we're going to talk about today, the three C's and three P's. Following is a brief overview of those three C's of CPR and the three P's of first aid. We'll develop your standards for preparedness to face pretty much any emergency, okay? Maybe not all. We can't predict everything, but pretty much any emergency that you're going to see here. So let's get started. The significance. And this one's a little bit harder to see. I'm sorry. I'll just read it off if you can't see that. So that was the other thing I didn't know. I'm going through my font sizes, and I'm like, okay, I don't really know exactly how this is going to show up. But learning the life-saving skills prepares you to act confidently during emergencies. This is where the three C's of emergencies and three P's of first aid come into the picture. They provide a clear and structured plan to care for the victim. At the same time, the three P's present the primary goals of first aid, and we're going to explore those benefits to those. First and foremost, speed and efficiency. When accidents happen or someone falls ill, knowing the three C's and three P's will allow you to act quickly. Swift and decisive action can improve the victim's chance of survival. Okay, the longer we sit and wait and scratch our head and want somebody else to respond, okay, that is worse for the victim. So we need to act swiftly and decisively. How do we do that? Knowledge. Knowledge is power. We know that for sure. Knowledge is power. If we have the knowledge, if someone should fall ill, someone can assess that person and be like, I know exactly what this is. Here's what we need to do. So we're going to get a quicker response if we have people that are educated when it comes to first aid, CPR, and et cetera. Now, these principles give you a structured approach, minimizing delays and maximizing the effectiveness of your response. Safety and confidence. Let's talk about that. In the event of a major accident or natural disaster, individuals with first aid skills can help right away, and that is what we need. That is very, very important that we act quickly. You are less likely to panic during stressful situations, ensuring your own safety while reducing the risk of additional injuries or escalating the emergency. Am I going too fast for anyone? Empowerment. Let's talk about empowerment then. Knowing what to do in an emergency will make you more confident in your ability to act rather than feel helpless. Has anybody ever experienced that helpless feeling when something happened? Maybe you witnessed a car crash. Maybe someone did fall. Maybe someone's clutching their chest. Seemingly it's a heart attack. And you're just like, you don't know what to do. I mean, I think we've all been there. I know I've been there. And then I'm telling myself, all right, Frank, you got to go get this training. Like, you need to be better at this because people rely on you. People in my position, you can't hide. You can't be like, hey, go take care of this. It doesn't work that way. Everyone's going to look to you to be the savior. It's no different if somebody was ill in this room, maybe they're clutching their chest and they go down. If you knew you had a paramedic in the room, who is everyone going to look at? Sure. If you have a doctor in the room, same thing. Everyone's going to look to those people. Why? Because they have so much knowledge in this field. They're the ones truly that are going to be confident. They're not going to hesitate. And they are going to respond to that emergency quickly. Why? They have the confidence, right? That's what they've been taught. So their confidence is up, okay? This knowledge contributes to a stronger community. I think you guys would all agree with that. Additionally, first aid. First aid training isn't a one-time process. You will continue to learn new techniques, staying up to date with the best methods that are out there. And again, I can't stress it enough that I'm starting this at such a basic level, right? I want to kind of get the ball rolling, get the juices flowing so that we can come together, train as a community, and make this church a better, safer place. That is our goal. Now, not everyone is going to have the same amount of training. There's, you know, as we start here, and I was telling everyone earlier, Mark included, like, hey, let's start slow. That crawl, walk, run. You know, let's just get some basic stuff out there, and then we can build on it. But we have to have a building block in which to go from. Down the road, we're looking at doing some active shooter training. You know, there's a lot of these trainings I do, and if there's something that you need that I can't do, trust me, I will find somebody to do that for you. I will get them in here. All right, let's get right on to the three C's of an emergency and the three P's of first aid then. The three C's of emergency are check, call, and care. And this is something, I threw that up there because that's an easy symbol. That's an easy thing we can put on a card. And if something happens and you start to, because has anyone ever experienced, does anyone in here know truly, and I can't talk about it today because it would take me 4 hours at least just to talk about it, about your sympathetic nervous system? Is anybody educated in that in here?
A little bit.
What
I remember from school.
Yes, a little bit's better than nothing. But I will tell you this, and all the things I teach, whether it's self-defense, defensive tactics in law enforcement, active shooter stuff, all this stuff is great. But what some of these instructors or trainers are not teaching is sympathetic nervous system. So what happens to you when your heart rate rises? And in an emergency, trust me when I tell you, your heart rate spikes. Yep. Oh, yeah. You start to feel, you swear your heart's coming right out of your shirt, right? So that's good and bad. And again, I can't get into the full details of it. However, if you allow your heart rate to get up, for some people it's going to be beyond 145 beats per minute. And there's different conditions that are going to happen to you, especially at like 175 beats per minute. But even backing up to 145 beats per minute, you start to lose dexterity. All these fine motor skills, they go out the window, right? This is what people don't tell you. This is what you need to know. Because when you're stressed that much, even something as simple as dialing 911 is impossible. And everyone says, I could ask you that question right from the get-go. Hey, if someone fell ill right now, what would you do? Well, I'd call 911. Okay? Maybe you would, you know, your heart rate wouldn't be to that level, but what if there was an active shooter? What if someone came with a gun? Where do you think your heart rate will be? Right through this roof, right? So, good luck doing anything if you don't have any kind of formal training, okay? You get up to about 175 beats per minute, you've lost gross motor skills, okay? Being able to do two movements at once, like if you were to think about it as a tennis player. Tennis player throws the ball up and the other arm with the racket hits the ball. That goes. These are movements that you will not be able to accomplish when you get your heart rate up that high. You get up to about 200 beats per minute, you're going to go in condition black. Condition black means it's freeze. Okay, you are going to freeze and you are not going to make a very good decision at all, if any decision at all, which is very, very scary. Okay, so we have to work on how do we do that. We got to stay calm. We got to control our breathing. If we control our breathing, which, by the way, is the only thing that's linked to that nervous system, is our respiratory system, to help calm us down. We have to control that heart, okay, as best we can. So by breathing in for 3 seconds and hold for 3 seconds at the top, exhale for 3 seconds and hold again for 3 seconds at the bottom. If you can do 3 or 4 cycles of that, you can lessen your heart rate, okay? I would just, any time this happens to you, the next time you're driving down the road and what's going to jump out in front of you?
Deer.
Right? When that happens and that you're going to feel it, you know, again, stay on the road. Please don't swerve to miss the deer and go off the road. But when that happens to you, just think of what I said and start breathing. Because the quicker you can get your heart rate down, the safer you are to drive that vehicle on a roadway. Okay? So you got to remember, anytime you're spooked, you're going to feel it, start breathing. And hold. Next time you get nervous, I just want you to try that. Start practicing that now. How many of you do that? Okay, good. So we've got a bunch of you already doing it. So, again, it's not rocket science, is it, right? I'd love to take credit for that, but I can't. So sorry. But first, our first C is check. Assess the situation, and this is important, right? So we want to assess the situation. The goal here is to keep everyone safe at the scene, okay? If there is an emergency, hear me out. You have got to make sure everyone is safe at the scene, okay? Sometimes we lose focus of this. And this is what I'm talking about with the sympathetic nervous system. Once you get up that far, how many senses do we have? You say 5. I like to say 6. Intuition. I know, it was an add-on, but I like it. I like it. So the next time, you know, you walk out in the dark and all of a sudden the hair on the neck stands up and you're like, I don't see anything. There's probably something out there. Whether it's someone, a stalker, or whether it's a bear, coyote, or something that could harm you, it's probably there. You just can't see it. Maybe you can't hear it right now, but your spidey senses kicked in, right? That intuition. So just honor that. But again, back to the senses, in a high-stress situation, guys, in a high-stress situation, your primary sense that's going to take over, and I mean completely take over, is your eyes. It's your sight. However, get this. High-stress situation, primary sense is your eyes, but you lose some of this. Monocular vision, binocular vision, depth perception, focus, and you get tunnel vision, up to 70%. You could lose up to 70% of your peripheral vision. So that's like putting those horse blinders on. And night vision. So when all these things start to deteriorate, because our heart rate is through the roof, our sympathetic nervous system is kicked in, that's scary in itself when you yourself can't even see that well. Right, so we've got to take our time. We cannot rush into scenes. No matter what's happening, stop and assess the situation. Okay, what do we got going on here? You know what I mean? Think about if you were in the church when that ceiling partially came down, right? Is that not going to raise a heart rate? Oh, boy. But you got to stop and just take a second, because what's happening behind you could be worse. So take a second and look. Assess the situation before you just go jump in the gun. Does that make sense? Okay. And we'll move on, because I've got a time. I don't want throwing books at me. During an emergency, what should you check first? Anyone? Okay. So that would be in a heart situation. Someone's clutching their heart. They go down. You're thinking, checking theirs. Okay. Anybody else? What would you do? Any emergency. Think of anything. What could happen? Go ahead.
The victim, regardless of what the situation is.
Check victim first. Okay, good.
If the shooter is more than one.
Ah, there you go. So that's good. So now we're starting to look at what? Different scenarios. What could happen? Could be a heart attack. This could be an active shooter. So you guys see how we can never stop thinking about what could happen, scenario-wise? Could a vehicle pull in here and drive right into the side of the building? Sure. Could the power go out? Sure. Could we get hit by some random tornado that we didn't even hear about until it was way too late? Could that happen? Sure. Anything could happen. And we have to constantly tell ourselves that any emergency is possible. It's anything can happen to us, okay? So, yes, there's certain things, depending on what's going on, what you might want to check first. And we'll talk about more stuff. Upon arrival, if you're already here and you witness it, that's one thing. If you are walking into an emergency or walking out to an emergency situation, that's another. Upon arrival, quickly assess the area and the victim's condition before offering direct assistance. Okay? If, just saying, we're in the back room, maybe there's some materials in the building, something hazardous. Somebody screams, they hit the deck, you go back there and there's like a plume of smoke. There's something in the air. Should you rush right into that victim? 100% no, right? You don't know what that material is. We've had law enforcement officers, first responders such as fire and EMS respond to a scene. Something's in the air. Somebody obviously collapsed. That's why they got called there. They rush right in, and here it was a deadly gas, and they fell immediately ill and deaf within seconds, right? So we can't do that anymore. We have to stop and assess the situation and ask yourself, is it safe to approach? If it looks safe, great. How many times have we seen a car down the road go off the road, hits a telephone pole, wires are down, and people don't stop and look, especially in the dark, right? Those lines, they don't light up in lime green and say, hey, stay away from me. Stay away from me because I will bite you, right? They don't do that. Next thing you know, you walk up on it and you stepped on it. You are now out of the picture. You're the next victim, right? So we got to stop, look and listen. Ensure the environment is safe for you to approach and help without putting yourself at risk. The last thing we need in our already stressed out system of first responders. EMS, fire, law enforcement is already stressed to the max. We don't have the numbers that once upon a time we did. Not everyone wants to jump into these fields anymore. It's just not happening, right? So the last thing we need on limited resources is a second, third, fourth victim, right? So I know everyone wants to rush. I know we want to go help people right away, but you've got to assess, okay? Have to assess. Now that third C, call. Activate emergency service. And again, how do we do that? After assessing the scene, and then we assess the victim, find out what's going on, call for help immediately, okay? Can we have somebody calling while we're assessing the victim? Sure. Matter of fact, I welcome it. I got victim. I'm down. Sir, call 911. Ma'am, go get the AED, right? Somebody has to take command of the scene. If we have nobody taking command, it's a mess, and things are not getting done, right? Would you guys agree? I mean, we manage. We have managing supervisors out there for a reason. We supervise and manage everything we do. So take control of the scene. Something happens to him. He goes down. I got it. I'll assess. Sir, call 911. Ma'am, grab the AED. Everybody else, please stay clear or stand by, right? I don't need everyone piling in on him. We're all on his chest, and then, of course, he can't breathe because there's five of us on top of him. So, you know what I mean? And just to back up real quick. So, with that said, what's your comms like out here? Do you know? Does your cell phone work? It's spotty, isn't it? Yeah. Correct. It is. It's very spotty out here, depending on what you have. So that's another thing. Do we have a landline? Does everyone know where the landline is? If I said, sir, go call, do you know where that landline is? Okay. Is it accessible? Okay, so it is accessible. So that's the one thing we need to train. Everyone needs to know where the landline is. Because if, again, something happens, you two are there and you say, I got this, honey, go call. She needs to know where that's at because she's going to try on her cell phone. Guess what's going to happen to her the more she tries on her cell phone and it doesn't go through? Heart rate goes up. So guess what happens when she's all, now she's starting to panic. My one and only job was to call and I can't do it. The more that happens, the further time goes on, the more her heart rate's going to go up. And then here we go. Sympathetic nervous system's kicked in. Now she'll lose dexterity. Why? Vasoconstriction. The blood is going to redirect away from the extremities, right? It's going to, from the fingers and hands. The blood goes into our major muscles and organs for a reason, for fight or flight. That's how we're wired as human beings. But again, now she's lost dexterity. She's having trouble picking up anything. She might find the landline. Her eyes aren't great. She might even have auditory exclusion that happens right now. You know what that is? You'll hear nothing. You'll hear absolutely zero. Law enforcement's taken a hit on this for a long, long time in saying, how could you shoot that man 37 times? Because after the fact, and then when they testify, we didn't hear. They had partners standing right next to him, shooting their gun. Not a one of them said, after hearing like an initial shot, they heard nothing. They have no idea what they fired. They have no idea what their partner fired. No clue. And everyone sits back and says, there's no way that's true. That's impossible. How do you not hear a gun going off a foot away from you? It is true. It's called auditory exclusion rule. And you can look it up. That's a serious condition. That given enough stress, that's what will happen to you. So if that ever happens and you're in a very high stress situation and you all of a sudden realize that you can't hear, okay, it's normal. All right, don't panic. It's normal. It'll come back. That's the thing. It will come back as that heart rate goes back down. You'll get back into the parasympathetic nervous system. It'll come back, but try not to panic. Just breathe. Oh, in situations like severe bleeding, a heart attack, or difficulty breathing, every single second counts, right? We got to get to that person, start giving CPR if they're having a heart attack, right? We've got to get to that AED. Do you have an AED? Okay, so that's something, again, let's jot her down, right? Let's get an AED in this building. That'll help save a life. Generally speaking, and I was just at church myself this morning, you know, and I'm looking around, and I know most everyone in the congregation, right? But there's a lot of elderly, and we know there's heart issues when you get to a certain age. We all need to be concerned. But if they should fall ill at church, how do we help them? Because how long is it going to take that ambulance and paramedic to get out to you? Yeah. Unless, again, I'm telling you, and I know most of you know this already, not everyone's jumping into this voluntary service anymore for several reasons. Don't need to get into it. But that point being, time you take on a Sunday, try to get some volunteers together just to get the ambulance out the door and then to drive down here. And let's hope nothing happens on the way. The ambulance breaks down. They hit a deer. They're going so fast, they're not controlling it. They crash themselves, right? Anything could happen. Who's saving you out here? Who's saving you? It has to be you, right? You are your own community while you're here. This response, even from law enforcement, is going to be a while. I cannot stress that enough. If that's a heart attack, if that's someone that cuts themselves, maybe they fell, broke the glass, and as they were going, now they have an artery cut. Okay, that's serious. If you don't stop that bleeding right away, they're within 3 minutes for sure, they're dead. That's not much time. You got to act quickly, and how do you do that? How do I stop an arterial bleed when it's squirting out? You know, you're going to be panicking, right? Because ain't nobody want to touch that. You're looking at that and it's like, oh my God, right? It's scary. But we have to learn this, guys, as best we can. Is that going to be everyone? No. Some people will tell you right away, if I see blood, I'm out. If I don't throw up, I'll pass out. Not me personally, but some people. All right. So we know some people are not going to be able to do that. Some are. So let's find those resources that are out there. Let's get them in here. Let's get them trained, because that's our safety net, right? When response is too long to get here, you do not have those minutes. If it's a cut on a glass, if it's a gunshot wound, anything like that, it can happen. Okay? So what just happened up in Nelson just a couple days ago? Stab victim, right? Guy gets stabbed right in the upper chest. Time is clicking right away when that happens. So they get a helicopter there. But again, that takes time. We got to do the best we can out here. How do we stop the bleed? Pressure wounds. You know, are we stuffing wounds? Are we putting tourniquets on? Whatever that may be, we can get some of this stuff. We can train you up on it. Someone in the room say, hey, listen, I'm pretty sure I could handle this. I'm calm. So you want that person to be the one stuffing a wound. Stopping the bleed. You want somebody to be able to put a tourniquet on without panicking, right? That's what we need. If we're going to save each other until professional services can get here, then we got to do it. Somebody can do it. Research shows that the chances of surviving medical emergencies like cardiac arrest decrease every minute without a defibrillation or advanced medical care, right? So we don't have time. We must act quickly, and we must do it calmly. Therefore, contact medical professionals right away so they can transport the victim to the hospital. Paramedics are trained to stabilize patients and manage complications that arise during the transport. But again, it's going to be a while. We know that. It could be 10 minutes. Could be 15 minutes. That's too long. Okay, too long. Every minute counts. We got to act quickly. Now, the care. Care is provide immediate assistance. This step includes actions such as controlling active bleeding by applying pressure or a tourniquet, I've mentioned. Positioning the victim on their side, also known as the rescue position. Does anyone know that position? They're basically on their side, their arm. If I'm laying on my right side, I'm going to rest. You'd rest my head on my right arm, and you take my leg and you just slightly bend the top leg, which would be my left one, kind of what we call a kickstand position. That's a rescue position. It's the best position to be in. And we'll learn more of that later. Yes, ma'am.
Why is that?
If you lay someone down, the biggest thing we could have, if you're laying on the chest, asphyxiation. Okay, so we got to make sure that they can breathe. We want that diaphragm to be able to contract. If they're on their side, that's generally going to be the best position. Plus, they're sturdy on their own. And you'll see when we do some training, especially if we do some active shooter and stop the bleed training for you, you'll see that position, you can put them in that position and leave them to move on to another victim. So again, if we apply a tourniquet, put them in a rescue position so they can breathe, and then we can move on to another victim and hopefully save them, okay? Using ice packs for mild injuries and pain relief. Proper care can stabilize critical patients and prevent further deterioration, increasing the odds of a full recovery. So that's, again, stuff that we'll learn later. How can we do this to basically increase the odds of a full recovery later for that victim? A lot of times, if we do the right thing, it could get a full recovery depending on what it is. Now, the three P's of first aid. First aid is the initial medical assistance provided to a person during an emergency. It should be administered as soon as possible after an injury or accident. To perform these emergency action steps properly, you need to learn the three primary principles of first aid, okay, which is preserve, prevent, and promote. Now let's examine each one of those principles. Preserve life, number one. The immediate goal of first aid is to preserve the victim's life and that of the rescuer. Okay, because we're always thinking about the rescuer as well. It's got to be safe. You should assess the situation to ensure no hazards to yourself or others are in that immediate area. Again, we talked about it. If it's an electrical issue, are those electrical lines still hot? And are they touchable, right? If they're reachable, we don't want to be near it. So we don't want to go touch the victim either. If that open electric line is on their body, if you touch their body, you're getting shocked as well. Again, if it's a hazardous material, something is in the air, or it's even liquid form, again, know what it is that we're dealing with before we just rush in, okay? Even fire now, fire and EMS, if they're on the scene of something, it's a tanker truck, they're going to read that placard on the truck way far away before they even get close to help a victim. They need to know exactly what that tanker is hauling, okay? Now, could that happen here? Could there be some sort of hazardous material vehicle going down the road and have a crash and that go airborne on a Sunday and here we are, right? So we might want to rush right out and help and see what's out there, what's going on, how can we help the driver, but that may not be the best decision. So stop and assess that before you do it. Preserve life. Does anyone remember our ABCs? When you talk about first aid, CPR, they always say ABCs. Okay. First one, airway, right? Check if the victim's airway is clear. If unconscious, ensure their airway is open by tilting their head back and lifting their chin. Remove any obstructions if necessary. Could be a choking victim. Okay, get them on their back, get that head up, lift that chin, and let's look and see what's in there. Don't recommend doing a blind sweep right away. You're going to need to check and see if there's something there. Use your eyes first, in other words. And when we do those, get somebody out there. Is anybody here first aid CPR trained now? No?
I wasn't.
Okay. Is it something that you would be looking to do? Have that on a day we could bring someone out and get that training? Okay. All right, the B. So we know ABCs, airway, breathing is the B. Determine if the victim is breathing by looking, listening, and feeling. If they are not breathing, begin CPR. Okay. Starting those compressions, chest compressions, are key. That needs to happen right away. Okay, and that needs to continue. If you're going to have any chance at all in saving a life, we got to start that chest compression immediately. And the C, circulation. Look for signs of circulation, such as a pulse. If there is no pulse, continue with CPR. Okay? You'll continue with CPR. There's little charts out there. I just threw this in there because this is something that you can get. You can print it off. You can laminate it. You can post it all over the church. It just gives somebody under stress a little reminder. Like, oh, what do we do first? Oh, it's right here on my chart. Okay, do this. Okay, oh, second thing, do this, right? So we can, these little charts are what I call cheat sheets, and they do seem to help, right? They do help under stress. That's the other thing. So you don't want your memory to have to start thinking of something you haven't done in a while. Like, it's been a little while since you had the first aid CPR. Can you imagine if you had to do it right now? You know what I mean? It's there. That knowledge is actually there. But here's the problem. It's in your long-term memory bank. It's not in your short-term memory bank, in her case. If it was, she'd respond just like that and know what to do. That knowledge is there. She was trained at one time. It's just back in the Rolodex. So your brain is going to be like, tick, 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 tick.
My Rolodex isn't working.
You need new batteries in it. So it starts, yes. And it might be something, and we've all been there too, like, you cannot think of something like someone's name or, you know, what was your sixth grade teacher's name or, you know, one of these things. Until when? 2, 3 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah.
You sit up in bed. Ah, that's what it was. Yeah. And that gets us all the time. But does that help us now in an immediate emergency situation? Of course it doesn't, right? But we always remember later on, but that's too late. Now, prevent deterioration. What are we talking about here? This involves taking steps to ensure the victim's condition doesn't worsen. We don't want to put that person in a worse spot, or even by not even put them in a rescue position, could worsen their case, right? We don't want that to happen. So this means protecting the injured or ill person from further harm. Anything could get worse, trust me, including moving them carefully to avoid exacerbating their injury. So again, if it's someone that had a fall, we got to be careful of what? Moving them. For what reason? Do we know? Yeah, neck, spine injuries, any head injuries, stuff like that. We got to be, best thing to do is stabilize. If we can get into that condition or that environment that they're in, if we're safe, we can safely go there, let's get there and let's just stabilize that head, keep them safe. Okay, this kind of first action or first aid action includes, number one, removing nearby hazards. Identify and remove any immediate dangers if it is safe to do so. I must stress that. So immediate dangers that are around the victim, such as electrical wires, glass, objects, or flammable liquids, or anything else that you can think of that could be dangerous. Again, if it comes to electric lines and you know of a safe way to move them, great. If not, let the professionals do it. Okay, that's something you don't want to get bit by. If there's anything that's around the victim, again, somebody goes down, it's a heart attack, but they've smashed glass. For any rescuer or anybody else coming in, the glass in itself could now be a problem for anybody else. So if we're attending to someone on the heart attack side and we have extra bodies, hey, sir, can you go get a broom? Let's clean up as much of this glass before first responders get here, just so we can ensure everybody else is safe. I know that might even sound a little silly, but it's really not. We still all have a job to do. What we tell law enforcement, when I'm teaching guys like active response tactically, we always tell them, like if we breach a home to go in on a warrant, maybe it's a high-risk warrant, we breach a house, we go in and you find yourself stopping and pausing and looking around, if you don't have a job, what we say is find one. You should never just be standing around looking, right? Unless you're providing overwatch or security. Otherwise, find a job. There's always something that needs to be done. Okay, so same thing here. If there's an emergency, see what you can do. Provide assistance, because do you have to be the one providing that immediate care? No. If you've got trained people in here that can do that, let them do it. Let them handle that. You can be helpful in so many other ways, right? What if a fire started? Someone might be, I know how to get to the hose. I know I can get a water supply. Okay, we'll go. And how about other people? How do we get people out of here? You know, the last thing we want is a stampede towards the back or some exit and we cause more injuries, right? A lot of people have actually been injured and killed just trying to escape a structure. Okay, that's pretty bad, right? That's really bad. So we have to take the time. Someone could simply direct traffic. Standing at the top, come on, sir, that way, right? Remember, people's sympathetic nervous systems kicked in. They're not thinking clearly. They don't see very well. So somebody needs to take command and say, hey, follow me. I have you, right? Is that not what God does? Absolutely, right? Does he not say, follow me? So we need to be that person. When an emergency happens, somebody has to stay calm. You need to look out and say, sir, I got you. Follow me. Right? We can do that. We all have that ability. Securing the area. If the area is dangerous and poses a risk to you, the victim, or first responders, or anybody else for that matter, secure it the best you can, right? Secure it the best you can. If it's still dangerous, whatever that situation may be, secure that situation as best you can. so we ensure nobody else gets hurt. Promote recovery, helping ensure a quick and safe recovery from severe injuries or life-threatening conditions, depending on the situation. You should assist the victim to help prevent long-term effects. For example, if the victim has burns, you can pour cool water onto the burn to help them soothe it and prevent any further damage. Not cold water, but cool water. Okay? Is that possible? Could someone get a burn here? Right? Some coffee was being poured earlier. Your comment was what? Yeah, don't burn me. Don't pour it on me. Right? No one wants to feel that. But if it were to happen, you accidentally get touched by that hot item, we could be pouring cool water on it. Again, takes that calm person. I got you. Come with me. Right? And let's go treat them. Let's make sure that this situation is not any worse. Like all of a sudden we're pouring it and burn someone. They throw the coffee pot and you decide to be the one to catch it. Right? Now, don't do that. Don't catch it. All right, comfort in need. The first step in promoting recovery is to encourage the victim to stay calm and hopeful. Okay? You're going to have that victim that's going to want to panic. If they cut themselves and they look and they see blood is squirting out, they're naturally going to want to panic. Problem with that is what? Yeah, the heart rate's going to go up and it's going to pump that blood out even faster. Okay? So positive talk. Ma'am, try to stay calm. I've got you. I'm going to stop this bleed. Just try to stay calm. Breathe. Stay awake. Breathe. Talk to me. What's your name? Maybe you don't know him. Maybe you know their son. Hey, where's John today? Right? Just anything you can connect. If you can connect to them where they're not thinking about dying, that's going to be huge. Same thing if it's a gunshot victim. Okay, I got you. We're treating it. Stay calm. We're going to save you. Right? Help is on the way. Do anything you can to calm them down. Because there's two things that are very, very contagious with human beings. Calm and panic. If we stay calm, generally speaking, we can keep most everyone calm. But if we panic in an emergency situation, we cause panic. Right? It's very, very contagious. So always remember that. The more you panic and flail and kick and carry on, somebody else is going to end up doing the same thing. Stay calm. Reassure them that help is on the way. Many victims experience shock after an injury or sudden illness, which can worsen their condition. Comforting words of encouragement will reduce the effects of shock and can do wonders for their recovery. Empower yourself to take decisive actions during an emergency. The principles, 3 C's of CPR, of first aid, go beyond knowing how to respond to an emergency. It's about being prepared. First and foremost, we have to be prepared. Have to be. 2, when it happens, staying calm and then building that confidence to act when it matters the most, okay, is absolutely critical. Be prepared. Stay calm. Again, if we don't have stop the bleed kits, or we have no way of treating a burn victim, or any of these other things that we can think of, maybe an AED, okay, the more we're prepared, the calmer we're going to be, the better we can help a victim each and every time. But we have to stay calm. Some of this equipment that we use is only as good as what? Person using it, right? So you're no good to me. I could have all the equipment in the world. We could spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars for this church, and if the person can't even use it, it's no good to us. We just kind of wasted money. The knowledge empowers you to stabilize the victim and offer comfort until professional help arrives, and I've said that. Being prepared isn't just about having the right tools, it's about having the right knowledge and skills to use them effectively. Take the time to learn them, as they might one day be the key to saving someone's life. I would agree with that. Okay? That's a quick, down and dirty, but questions. We've got 10 minutes. Sure, now y'all get scared. Yes.
If you had a shooter in here, a lot of people's just going to freeze.
Sure. Absolutely.
Y'all, what do we do?
Yeah, 100%. Even some of your best trained do the same thing. They freeze, they panic, they make silly decisions, which is kind of scary. None of us truly know. Not some of your best of the best, your Navy SEALs, Black Ops guys. Some of these guys that train and train and train have found themselves in a situation out there in a tactical situation and has made a mistake, right? We really don't know. I'd like to sit here and tell you that if there was an active shooter right now, that I would protect all of you, I would take care of the threat right away, blah, 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 blah. I don't truly know that to be true. Isn't that scary? What's that? Sure. And I do hope with all the training experience I have, I hope that I would make the right decision. But what scares me the most is that I really don't know. I'd love to be able to tell you that. And any guy can come in and beat their chest and tell you, this is what I would do. I hope. But we don't know. We thought the same thing with Parkland, Florida. You know, the SRO, the school resource officer, who didn't go in. How about Navalny down in Texas? That horrific shooting at the school. That was so incredibly long. It made Columbine look like a child's play. None of us can understand it, and it's very easy even for me as an educator to sit back and Monday morning quarterback. But why didn't they go? I don't know. That's what we trained for. It's not like the old days. It's not like back in the day, was it 2004, when we had a young boy bring the guns to Raquel Butler? Things are different. Back then, hey, you had to wait for a four-man team to assemble. And we did. That's what happened. The four-man team was going down the hall when he retreated to the bathroom and took his own life. You know, this boy just turned 12 years old. You know, it's very, very sad. But, you know, here again, nowadays we know, like, if you're the first arriving officer, you're going in. That's what you signed up for. Yeah, it might be for $17 or $18 an hour, but that's what you signed up for. So you know it. You've got to go in and do the best you can to stop the threat. That's what your first goal is. But again, it's just, I'm going back to, it's just scary that we don't know. We, in true high-stress situation, do we really know what we'll do? No. How do we help that? There is one thing that can help that, and it's training. It's education and it's training, and you've got to train. It has to become muscle memory so that we don't even think about it. How many of you can ride a bike? Pretty much all of us. How many has it been a long time since you rode a bike? Okay? But I bet you this. If I put a bike here, and I bet you could get on and pedal right away. And, you know, because that's muscle memory, right? You've done it so many thousands of times, it's just natural. It's no different if I had a ball in my hand and I was like, and you saw it, first of all, you knew it wasn't like a hot potato. And I was tennis ball. And I went like this, he'd catch it. How does he know how to catch that ball? Reflex. It's a trained reflex, right? He's caught a ball, whether it's a tennis ball or other ball, he's caught it many hundreds, if not thousands of times. So it's become repetition. He first identified it, saw it with his eyes. Oh, that's a safe object. I can catch that. If it was a hot rock I just pulled off a fire, as soon as I'm doing this, he's already scurrying. Right, he's going left or right, but he's not going to stay in the same path of that rock coming at him. Right, makes sense. But so that my whole point being, going back to that, is we have to train, right? Even if it's just little nuggets at a time, like crawl, walk, run. Even if it's just little nuggets at a time, it builds your confidence so much that when there's actually a true emergency, you can make a good decision, right? Because that's what we really want. We all need to make a good decision, hopefully.